Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other things of interest. Today, we're going to look at a couple of audiobooks which are more for the guys, although you gals might enjoy this series as well. My wife did. A local-to-me author here in Chattanooga named Jerry Menshew has penned two books in a trilogy called Nighthawk. The first two books, Nighthawk and Nighthawk Vanishing Shadows, are available right now at audible.com and at amazon.com, and for you international purchasers at digitalaudiobooks.co.uk. Well, what about Nighthawk? Well, it's a book which has a little of everything in it. We meet Michael, who is an orphan, looking for his family and his identity. We meet his real parents, who are looking for him as well. We see him raised by a foster family who love him dearly and want him to find his origins. Are you seeing the possibilities here? Well, author Jerry Menshew takes us through these twists and turns and then spins us into the world of science fiction. How? Well, Michael is infected by an alien organism which changes his life. Scientists want to study him. The Air Force wants to use him as a secret weapon. The Soviets want his blood. Michael just wants to know who he is. And along the way, Michael finds and loses love. His family's still looking for him. And the Soviets set up the meeting of his life. How's that for intriguing? Now, telling too much would give the plot twists away, so let me give you a couple of sample audios to enjoy. In this first segment, Michael is 11 years old. He's told by his foster parents of his real parents for the very first time. Michael was sitting on the side of the bed, lost in thought, when he heard a knock on the bedroom door.
"Come in," he said.
Matthew and Teresa entered the room, and Matthew said, "We need to talk. We heard about what happened between you and Danny Rogers today."
Michael said, "Just tell me that it isn't true."
Teresa said,
"I'm afraid that it is true. I know that we should have told you before now. We're both sorry that you had to hear it from someone other than us."
Matthew added, "Folks around here never blamed you for what your parents did. After a while, folks just stopped talking about it, and it became easier for us just to put it off till some other time. I guess we waited too long."
Michael said, "But you told me that my mama died in an accident and that my daddy was missing."
Teresa said,
"I know that it's probably stretching the truth a bit, but in a manner of speaking, that's what happened. Waylon Rogers deeply regrets what happened. He wouldn't have hurt your mama or your daddy for anything in the world. But after he was hit in the head with a jack handle, he didn't have much choice. I mean, after all, he was sworn to uphold the law. I hope that you can find it in your heart to forgive him."
Matthew said, "I don't know why they robbed the bank that night. I guess when people start having money problems, they resort to drastic measures sometimes. We don't want you thinking that you're a bad person because of what they did. I believe that a man has to walk his own path in life. You're a good boy. I have every reason to believe you'll grow up to be a good man."
Teresa said, "I can tell you this for sure. Your mama loved you. She fussed over you and rarely let you out of her sight."
With tears in his eyes, Michael said,
"They left me in a car by myself. And then my daddy ran off and he's never come back for me."
Matthew said, "I know that. And maybe at first Jake ran off because he was mad and scared. Think about this, Michael. Jake is a fugitive from justice now. Maybe he hasn't come back for you because he doesn't want you growing up with him being on the run. Maybe he's thinking about your best interests."
Teresa said, "Why don't you come with us? There's something that we need to show you."
Michael followed his foster parents out of the bedroom and down the hall. At the end of the hallway, Matthew pulled a cord that let the attic stairs down. They climbed the stairs into the attic. There was a light in the center of the room. Matthew turned it on. Teresa walked over to a corner and removed a sheet from some boxes. Among the boxes was a suitcase. She picked it up and brought it closer to the light. She said to Michael,
"This belonged to your mama."
The police gave it to us when they decided they didn't need it any longer. They kept your daddy's things because they might need something for evidence when they find him.
Michael opened the suitcase. The first thing to catch his attention was a tiny baseball shirt wrapped in plastic with the words Twins on the front. Just below the right shoulder, embroidered at an angle, was Michael's name.
He unwrapped, unfolded the shirt, and turned it over and over in his hands as if it might hold some magical link to his past.
Matthew said, "I've never been much of a baseball fan, but I think that's a Minnesota Twins shirt."
Michael asked, "Did they ever talk about Minnesota?"
"No," Matthew answered, "but they said that they were from California, and they never talked about California either. Actually, they never said much about their lives before coming here."
As Michael ran his fingers over the shirt, he found the initials PW embroidered into the front hem.
Teresa said, "It's my guess that PW is the person who embroidered your name in the shirt. It's probably Jake's mother. The W probably stands for Weber. The P could be any number of names. They never mentioned any names with those initials."
Michael said, "I could have a grandma and grandpa someplace wondering whatever happened to us."
Michael folded the shirt and wrapped the plastic back around it. He placed it back into the suitcase and picked up a shoebox. He removed a rubber band from around it. He removed the lid, and the first item to catch his attention was a photograph of a young lady holding a baby. The baby was wearing the baseball shirt.
"Is this my mama and me?"
"Yes, it is," Teresa answered. "We don't know where that picture was taken, but it must have been somewhere on the Gulf Coast. You couldn't have been much older than that when you arrived here."
Michael placed the photo back into the shoebox and took out the remaining photos. There were about 20 of them. They were all pictures of Jake and Lisa in different settings: mountains, flatlands, canyons, oceans, etc.
Matthew said, "Jake and Lisa obviously traveled a lot."
Michael looked up and said,
"There are no more pictures of me."
Teresa said,
"You're right. I've always wondered about that myself. The way she fussed over you, I would have thought that she would have had more than one picture of you."
Michael put the photographs back in the box and looked at the other items: Jake and Lisa's marriage license, a dried rose, a movie ticket, and a seashell.
Matthew put his hand on Michael's shoulder and said, "My people have always believed that for a man to know his destiny, he must first know his past. My people have a rich heritage. I can't imagine what it must be like to know nothing of your past. But I do know this. One day you will leave us. When you do, you will carry these items down the path that you will walk. Perhaps they will lead you to the answers that you seek."
That segment is from the first book, Nighthawk. Now we're going to hear a second segment, which comes from the second book, Nighthawk Vanishing Shadows. In this, our hero, Nighthawk, is on a covert mission to apprehend a drug lord.
Nighthawk approached the portion of the brick wall that was behind the house. His photographic memory told him that there was a small building, probably a storage shed, halfway between the wall and the house. He jumped up, grabbed the top of the wall, and pulled himself up so that he could see over it. Two sentries were passing each other, and they stopped to talk.
"How about this? I put $100 on the Lakers, but you got to give me a 10-point spread."
"I'll match your 100 and give you a 5-point spread.
Let me think about it."
They continued on their patrol. As soon as the backs were to him, he pulled his body over the wall and landed silently on the other side. He darted swiftly to the small building without detection. A light on one side of the building cast a shadow on the opposite side. It provided a place for him to hide and plan his next move. The speed and silence with which he ran from bushes and trees to shadows made him virtually invisible to the sentries. That is, until he heard a deep-throated growl behind him. He looked and saw what had to be the world's largest Doberman pincher nearly on top of him. There was a swimming pool ahead of him. He ran for it,
jumped over a hedge, and the Doberman followed. A set of stone steps ascended to the pool level. He cleared them in one leap, and the dog followed. When he reached the deep end of the pool, he jumped onto the diving board. With the aid of his powerful legs, the diving board propelled him into the air. He executed a midair flip, landed gracefully on the other side of the pool, and continued to run. The dog followed and splashed into the water. Nighthawk disappeared around the corner of the house and leapt to a balcony on the second floor. He lay flat and looked down to the ground. From around the house, he heard a sentry yell, "Hey, you stupid dog, get out of the pool!" He looked through the sliding glass door into an empty bedroom. He carefully examined the door and saw no electrical alarm system. The owner of this house had apparently placed all of his trust in human and canine security. He tried the door, but it was locked. He closed his eyes and concentrated until he heard the deadbolt unlock. He opened the door, entered the dark room, moved across to the other door, cracked it open, and looked into the hallway. It was clear. He keyed the mic on his radio and said, "Nighthawk to Jaybird, go ahead. I'm in the mansion. I should have the lights off for you shortly. Stand by." 10-4, Nighthawk. He stepped out into the hallway, quickly moved to the corner where he stopped and peeked around. The way was clear to the stairs. He moved toward them until he heard footsteps coming up. He moved quickly back around the corner, pressed his body against the wall, and listened. At precisely the right moment, he stepped around the corner, threw out his right arm, and the heel of his hand connected with the man's nose. He staggered back, stunned. Nighthawk grabbed his collar with his left hand, slammed his body against the wall, and kneed him in the groin. "Tell me the location of the breaker panel that controls all the lights," the man's voice squeaked. "I don't know." Nighthawk drew his .45 and placed the end of the barrel just below the man's left eye. "Did I mention that this is a pass or fail test? You just failed, but because I'm a nice teacher, I'll let you take a makeup exam." "Down the stairs, turn right across the room, through the door, down the breezeway, through the door, across the garage, on the far wall." "That's better. You can go now." Nighthawk released his grip and holstered his weapon. The man swung at him, but he blocked with his left arm and jabbed with his right. The powerful fist connected right between the eyes. The victim fell back against the wall, his eyes crossed, and he slumped down to the floor. Nighthawk placed his ear to the nearest bedroom door. He heard nothing, so he opened it. The room was empty. He picked his unconscious victim up by the belt, hauled him into the room, and shut the door. He silently made his way down the stairs to the main foyer, turned right, crossed the room, and opened the door. The light on the breezeway was on. He thought, "This guy sure doesn't worry about electric bills." He could see two sentries in the driveway, talking. There was a water fountain in the yard about 10 feet from them. He closed his eyes and focused his mind on the water spout that rose about 2 feet into the air. He mentally commanded it to move, and it sprayed out in the direction of the sentries. When the spray of the water hit them, they jumped and yelled, "Hey, who did that? Somebody tried to be funny?" Nighthawk smiled and took advantage of the distraction. He dashed down the breezeway and through the garage door. The jeep that had led them here was there. He checked the rear compartment, and just as he suspected, the packages had been unloaded. On the far wall, he spotted the breaker panel. He spoke into his radio as he moved toward it. "Nighthawk to Jaybird, go ahead. What's your ETA? Give us 10 seconds. 10-4. Outside the garage, the sentries were still looking for the clown who had sprayed them with water. One of them said, "Hey, did you hear that?" "What is it?" "It's a chopper." Suddenly, everything went black just as the chopper appeared. DEA agents rappelled into the yard. Their night vision goggles gave them an advantage over the sentries. Inside the garage, Nighthawk waited for the personnel door to open, as he knew it would. When it did, the two sentries ran inside. One of them shouted, "Get the lights back on! I can't see!" A voice in the darkness said, "That's okay, I can see you fine." "Who said?" A foot to the stomach stopped the words in his throat. Another foot to his head knocked him unconscious.
The other sentry's eyes were adjusting to the darkness. He couldn't see his assailant, but that didn't stop him from firing wildly into the shadows. Suddenly, he was grabbed from behind. One hand had his collar and another had his belt. He was picked up an inch off the floor, pushed across the garage, and then slammed face first into the back wall. He turned around, stunned, and a powerful fist connected with his nose. The bone cracked, blood splattered, and he lost consciousness. Nighthawk ran through the doorway, down the breezeway, and back into the house. When he entered the house, a light hit him in the face. He dove for the floor to the right just as a gun fired. He came up into a kneeling position and fired. The bullet hit the flashlight, and it shattered. The man holding it screamed in pain. Nighthawk charged him, jumped, and spun around with his legs straight out. The side of his foot hit the side of the man's head and knocked him unconscious. Nighthawk heard more shots. Suddenly, the front door crashed open. A DEA agent, Vance Uffelman, rushed in with an M16 at the ready. When he saw Nighthawk, he yelled, "Friendly, hold your fire. We have shooters on the third floor." Nighthawk raced up the stairs with DEA agents behind him. He was way ahead of them when he reached the top of the third floor. Two shooters with rifles knelt at two windows firing into the yard. Suddenly the lights came back on and the shooter nearest him turned and saw him. He pulled his rifle from the window, but Nighthawk fired first. The bullet hit him in the left arm. He fell against the second shooter. Nighthawk yelled, "Drop your weapon and put your hands behind your head." The second shooter stood with his left hand above his head. He slowly removed the rifle from the window, let it drop to the floor, and put both hands behind his head. Three DEA agents came up behind Nighthawk. Vance asked, "Didn't I see you in the Olympics?" He ignored the question, nodded toward the second shooter, and said, "Cuff him."
I think you'll agree with me that Nighthawk and Nighthawk Vanishing Shadows are exciting, interesting, full of twists and turns which will keep you on the edge of your seat or awake while you drive. Besides this pair of books, you might want to check out others in the action-adventure category at my website. That's narrationbygeorge.com. When you go there, click on the Books menu tab and scroll to the Adventure section. You'll find Nighthawk, as well as a dystopian thriller called Seasons of Change. There are three westerns and a pair of unique books by Michael Miller about a kid with a different kind of brain. Those are all on my website, narrationbygeorge.com. So thanks for joining me today for the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. Next Wednesday, I have an interview that I did for Helping Hands Press. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and not miss a single one. Check my website for more information. It's narrationbygeorge.com. See you next week. Thank you.